new CBS Monday.
NCIS, hands where we can see them.
NCIS and NCIS Hawaii return with all new cases.
Double tap to the chest, one to the head.
These guys are professionals.
All new criminals.
Violent island that got here.
Welcome to paradise.
And all new crimes to be solved.
If you're watching this, I've been arrested.
What are the charges?
Just one. Murder.
New NCIS and NCIS Hawaii. Monday, starting at 9, 8 central. On CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Greg Ducharme, joined today by Mark Immelman and Kyle Porter, and an exciting day out at Pebble Beach. The AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am has concluded, and the scores were quite high today. But a big congratulations goes out to Nick Taylor, fending off the big guns that were right behind him, and Phil Mickelson and Jason Day. Gentlemen, first of all, thank you for joining me. Mark, I know you were out there covering the action today on the ground. How tough was it playing out there?
Man, it was brutal, Greg. I was looking through some of the numbers, and I see the average score here in the final round was 74.42. Given how this place was the first 2 days when it was like a postcard, it was like someone switched on the fan. It was a cold, damp wind. 14 was like playing straight into the wind. So the way the golf course sits when you're traveling out, the north wind comes over your left shoulder. So for a right-hander, that's difficult and it's blowing toward the ocean. Then you turn back around on hole 11, and then you've got the wind coming sort of in and off the right-hand side. And anytime you get some respite, it's sort of down 16, 17 a little bit. So it was a tough day, but, you know, wind aside, just the greens got firm and fast. And if you were above the hole, you were cooked. I mean, it was really hard to get the ball into the right place, because if you were above the hole, you were putting defensively from the get-go.
All that being said, when I watched this coverage, I was remarked at how many chip-ins there were. It seemed like Phil Mickelson was chipping in on every other hole, at least on Saturday. And then on Sunday, we had Nick Taylor chipping in, I think it was two times. There were chip-ins going in everywhere. Kyle, what was the biggest surprise for you this week watching all that? Was it the short game action that we saw? Was it the fireworks around the greens?
Well, the biggest surprise for me is that Jordan Spieth is still plus 2,200 to win the 2020 Masters. he should be. No, I'm just kidding. I mean, honestly, like, the biggest surprise might have been Jordan Spieth shooting 67 on Sunday. But, and I think, I don't know.
Hey, by the way, he saw me on the golf course and asked me to send you his best regards.
Well, he'll text me later and thank me for all the publicity. But, yeah, I appreciate you passing that on, Mark. I was a little disappointed in the way Phil closed it out. You know, it was kind of there for him. And look, this sounds crazy. It's not just about winning this golf tournament. It's about not letting Kevin Streelman pass you down the stretch, getting into Mexico and solidifying your place in the U.S. Open. I mean, we can talk about, well, he's playing great golf right now, so surely he'll be in the U.S. Open. He was playing great golf this time last year, and then he faded so hard after Pebble last year that if the same thing happens this year, he's not going to be in the U.S. Open. So I know that feels like forever away. Why are we talking about Wingfoot? Why are we talking about the U.S. Open? Well, that's going to be a big storyline. That's going to be a big deal. And him, you know, I don't think he was going to ever really win, but making those three bogeys over the last, whatever, seven holes, I thought that kind of surprised me with the way he was controlling it on Saturday and the early part of Sunday.
Did the short game surprise you at all, Mark? I mean, if you look at his strokes gained numbers, they were fantastic on Saturday. Some of the best we've ever seen. I mean, he gained 4.228 strokes gained around the greens. I know that's your favorite statistic. But he was only 37.5% getting up and down on Sunday. Would you think that was just the different pin locations? Do you think he just faced different shots, or do you think Saturday was just that kind of special day?
Saturday was a special day, but he did reference the fact that with these greens that are some of the smallest on tour, you've got to, if you miss, and I think he hit nine greens on Saturday, you got to miss in the right places. And so he was chipping from underneath the hole. And look, one of those chip-ins on 14 was a little fortunate, because it was moving pretty fast when he hit the flagstick down. So Saturday, wasn't an outlier. Today was just difficult. It was downright hard out there. And, you know, it started to play firm. And me walking out there, you could feel the firmness of the ground under your feet. And then you get one hard bounce on the side of a green. And instead of just stopping there like it did early in the week, it bounced 30, 40, 50 feet off the green. And then all of a sudden, you're having to do something miraculous. So a lot of what you saw today was driven by the conditions. I mean, if you want to protect the game, and that's a different subject entirely, but you give a professional golfer firm greens, firm fairways, and rough, and you're going to see the scores go up. And that's exactly what we saw today around a very demanding golf course.
Are we talking about the distance report now, Mark?
Didn't go there.
That was a smooth little transition if you want to get into that, Kyle.
I'm down. Let's talk about it.
Well, you look at, just to continue on Phil Mickelson, because Phil is kind of in an interesting place. He said, he's noted that it's the athleticism of the players that have led to all this added distance. You see Phil now competing at this age, and he was there in position to win this golf tournament today. I mean, through six holes, he had himself a very good, very realistic shot at winning, and it got away from him. Do you think, looking at Phil, do you think that his added distance is something that's going to allow him to continue to compete for the rest of this year? Do you think this is just a venue that he really likes, and we're going to see a similar sort of fade that we did last year?
I think probably the fade. I mean, and this is not just a one-year thing. I mean, if you look at his last, I don't know, 5 years, he'll have this like mini run in January, February, March, and you're like, oh, Phil, you know, this could be interesting. Masters, you know, will the U.S. Open happen? And then if you look at his last 4 or 5 months in each of those years, it's not very good. And it's gotten kind of progressively worse in each of the last 5 years. I think the distance only goes so far. I mean, you look at his strokes gained on approach shots. He's 44th on Saturday. He lost a stroke and a half. He's 44th on Sunday. He lost half a stroke. He finishes, I know you can only measure pebble, so you're only measuring two rounds. He finishes 62nd in approach shots. I mean, that's not the formula for contending in golf tournaments, as you guys know. So it feels a little bit like he was, I don't want to say saved. He was kind of buoyed by his short game, especially on Saturday. And that's not sustainable. That's not the formula for contending and winning. But he is kind of riding a little mini heater right now. You go Saudi Arabia third, you go Pebble third. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how that kind of plays out over the next few weeks leading into to the Players Championship.
Go ahead, Mark.
If I might, Greg, sorry. We were having a pretty my colleagues and I were having a pretty spirited conversation about this couple nights ago, and Frank Nobile made a very good point. I've sort of maintained this, and he galvanized at some of these observations, and he said, week in and week out, of the best hitters, the person who chips and putts the best is the person who's going to win. And I think that's a very savvy observation, and I guess that sort of backs up what Kyle's saying. You know, if Phil can hit the ball better, which, you know, he sounds very happy with his golf swing, at least what he was saying to us after the final round here, the way the short game's going, he can contend. But if he continues to be a little erratic with the driver and put himself on the back foot and playing defense with the irons, can chip and putt till the cows come home, and I don't think you'll be able to win tournaments consistently.
Yeah, but do you trust where his irons are going right now, Mark? I mean,
Pebble to me is always one of those things where you've got to sort of throw it out, and this is not me being me anti-statistics, but with small greens and with winds and stuff like that, you know, you can get bad bounces and then it's a green that's missed or something like that, and you can get a firm bounce over a green or get a gust. I mean, I saw Jason Day, I was covering him, on 12, the Daniel par 3. I mean, this dude hit an iron off the tee that came up 10 yards short of the front bunker. And that's not what a former number one golfer in the world does. So I'm prepared to throw out some of the stats. I think after next week, around a place like, you know, Riviera, where Phil's played well, I think that'll be a better barometer of where his game is and where the iron game and the golf swing is right now.
I just think, so if you go back to some of Phil's best years, I mean, I'm looking at it right now. We talk a lot about the short game, the putting, the chipping. That's the stuff that makes SportsCenter, that gets the headlines. His iron play though, every year, top 10, ninth, fifth, 11th, seventh. And right now, you know, last year he's 122nd in strokes gained approach to green. This year he's like 91st. He'll have weeks where it's clicking, but I don't trust where some of his iron, where some of his ball flights and some of his iron play is going right now.
I don't find much reason to trust it either. Especially you look at a day like today when he hit the ball in the fairway a lot more. He wasn't necessarily able to gain on strokes approaching the green. He hit 10 greens after hitting 11 fairways. And I know that the conditions were difficult, and I know that some of the bounces he got were extreme, to your point, Mark. I mean, on number 12, he landed it just over the green, and it kicked 37 yards over. It ends up 37 yards past the flag. On 13, he hits a pitching wedge just over the green, and it bounces way over the green. And I'm sure that there's some win to that, especially when you combine the miss Jason Day had on number 12. But at some point, that's what separates Phil Mickelson. At a place like Pebble Beach, where he's won five times, he's had the success he's had there because he's able to dial in the distance of his approach shots. So I definitely have some concerns with Phil. And while this is a little mini heater, as you mentioned, Kyle, I wonder if this is just kind of a little short-lived. I wonder if this is just 2 weeks of him getting away to find the ball, find a way to get the ball in the hole, excuse me.
Yeah, I think that certainly could be the case. Is he playing Riviera next week? I haven't even looked at that.
He is, yes.
Is he playing Riviera? Yeah. Okay. I mean, that's just, you know, you go into that week and you're like, is Phil going to beat JT and Rom and Roar? Like, what do you, I mean, for him, I think you're playing to like, you're playing for, honestly, like, it sounds dumb, but again, world ranking points. So I do think there's stuff to build on there. I can't trust it for four straight days in any given event.
So one other guy that we got to get into here, because I tend to agree with you. Wait till you see the field next week at Riviera.
It's sick. It's
the
crazy.
Field is stacked. So for Phil for me is definitely a guy who struggles to kind of make the notable list other than his name, brand, and his finish this week. Okay, Phil is definitely a second tier when it comes to that field next week. But we have not talked about the winner of this tournament yet here at the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am, and that's Nick Taylor. Nick Taylor shot 32 on the front nine in the final round. He had one of the better rounds going on the course, and he ended up shooting a 70, which was good enough for a four-shot victory over Kevin Streelman. What did you make of this performance here? I mean, Nick Taylor's a guy you probably haven't heard of. He did win the Sanderson Farms 5 years ago. He was the number one amateur in the world for 20 weeks back in 2009, but he's not a guy we've heard of a lot. He has not really been in contention very much over the past 5 years. He's not a real familiar name. What did you see him do so well this week, Mark?
Well, I think there was a lot of comfort level for him because, as you know, he's Canadian, and he went to college where he was an All-America at the University of Washington. And, you know, it's very similar conditions up there to what we have had in Northern California this week. And he's played this event five times, and he's had a top 10 and a top 25, I believe it was. So there's an element of comfortability, you know, showing up here. He didn't bring the best of form coming into the event, but, you know, he came out and he dealt with the pro-am format of this whole thing well, because the play is slower. You're playing on three different courses. You know, oftentimes you're playing off in some different times of the day kind of thing. So you're out early or late. And so I think it was just a very mature performance from a guy who's been around the PGA Tour for a long time. I mean, that victory at the Sanderson Farms, that came pretty early in his career. So it was a guy that's been through the grinder some. And today, because of that, having to deal with the adversity of sort of being a bit of a journeyman for a while, a guy who had a lot expected of him but didn't really break out, I think that sort of galvanized him and prepared him for what he went through today under difficult conditions with a lion's share of the crowd pulling for Phil. So I was impressed. I mean, he's always been a good ball striker, but he was pretty sharp and he sort of did what he had to do coming down the stretch. I mean, what impressed me the most, really, it was after making double on 14 to come back there and birdie on 15. I mean, that was a masterclass in my opinion. So it was a very mature, very savvy performance, I thought.
I couldn't agree more. When I look through Nick Taylor, because I'm like, part of me is like, what has this guy been doing? I know I've been aware of his name. I've known I remember his win at the Sanderson Farms, but it's like he's just been a journeyman, like you said, not a guy that you see a lot of. You don't hear a lot about him. And so you don't really know what's going on with him. And as I started to look through some of his statistics, you know, and this is what I always do when somebody wins on tour. Like, how did I not pick this guy? And that unfortunately seems to happen far too often. But, you know, why did Nick Taylor win? Was there any sign leading into the tournament that that maybe somebody should have been aware of that we missed? And as I look through it, what he did differently than Phil Mickelson and what he did differently than Jason Day, he played the steady game. If you look at what he's done with his driving accuracy for the past 5 years, he's basically been below 62%. His high has been 62. His low has been 56% of the fairways hit, which typically is not a very important statistic on the PGA Tour. If you look at his greens of regulation, I mean, this is like Mark Immelman kind of statistics here, fairways and greens, right? 64% to 67%. His greens of regulation were 67% in 2019. We get to 2020 and he jumps up 7% in his fairways and he jumps up 6% in his greens of regulation. And what does he do this week? Well, all of a sudden he's tied third in greens of regulation and he's tied seventh in fairway accuracy and he played the steady game. And we saw a calmness out of him on Sunday that was, it was surprising, I think, to most. And it was extremely impressive. I think for him being able to get the ball into the first eight fairways, I think it took a lot of pressure off of his game and he was kind of able to forget about the fact that he had Phil Mickelson and Jason Day trying to chase him down.
Yeah, the thing that I started thinking about as he's playing the back nine, like we can talk about, I feel like we do this thing when we talk about everything that and I know Mark gets fired up about this. We reduce everything to statistics or, just these things that we can measure. You can't measure what you're feeling on the back nine at Pebble when you're playing alongside Phil, who won it last year. And this guy's got as many wins as you have top tens worldwide on every tour. Excuse me, he has twice as many wins.
Right.
So Phil's got 44 PGA Tour wins. Nick Taylor has 46 top tens worldwide over the course of his career professionally. That's not PGA Tour. That's everywhere. And you can't. I don't know. I think sometimes we forget like what does that feel like? Like what are you thinking as you're coming up 18 with a four. What do you think about you make double on 14? You know, you're like, wow, well, this is great. This is going to be on national television.
You're making my heart sing right now. I tell you what, I mean, you are so astute with this observation because I don't know if you guys were watching our coverage, but you know, Nick Felder, who's a Hall of Famer, he's been around the block, you know, and there was more than once coming down the stretch that I'm hearing him go, wow, I mean, this is getting tough for poor Nick Taylor right now. And he was referencing what he'd be going through mentally and emotionally. And that's something that people don't talk about. And I tell you what, he came through with flying colors because that thing could have gone in the tank like in a hurry after the 14th hole. But he hung in there and he finished it off.
Yeah, for sure. And I thought that was you know, that's super impressive. And you're not – if you're Nick Taylor, it's kind of like how I felt with Shane Lowry when in the Open last year. You know, how many shots do you get at something like this? Is he going to win 10 times? No. Is he going to win 5? Probably not. So yeah. to get it at Pebble against Phil, that's pretty cool.
You're almost thinking, I what goes through my mind, if I'm playing with Phil in that situation, I'm thinking, what does Phil think of me? What is Phil thinking of my game right now? Like, is he going to like me
what's
after?
This guy's name again?
Yeah. Are we going to be friends after? Is he going to get my name wrong in the interview afterwards? What's Phil think of me? Cause this isn't somebody that would be an idol, right? He's an idol for most of these guys out on the PGA Tour. And now you're stepping up in the ring with him going for, you know, 18 holes. And it's not an easy thing. You led the whole tournament. That's tough.
You know what I'd like to add? I honestly think that the conditions led into Nick Taylor's favor a little bit because it was so difficult that you're basically grinding on every shot and you know that everyone's grinding on every shot and you know that there's nothing really low to be had by anybody out there. So it was like a war of attrition and you got your nose to the grindstone. So in a funny sort of a way, you don't think about, maybe you'll think about Phil after he chips in or he does something like that, but it was just such hard work that I think that sort of played into his favor just in a strange sort of a way.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. It's so hard. There's nothing else you can focus on, yeah, but like not embarrassing yourself. You're not really worried about it. The distractions are almost limited because it's so tough and you got to worry about just keeping your ball between the galleries. And he did a great job of that. I mean, he was extremely impressive off the tee. He was extremely impressive with the putter and he was unfazed. It was very impressive. But Mark, you mentioned, you mentioned the nothing really low to be had out there. And the closest thing to a charge that we really saw was Kevin Streelman with a 68, coming in the final round there, 400 par 68 to move into a solo second. It was an impressive day for him. I saw him hit some great little flighted wedge shots in there close. He hit some phenomenal shots and is able to win the Pro-Am event with Larry Fitzgerald for the second time in 3 years. So impressive stuff for him. Congratulations to Kevin Streelman. What do you think of Kevin Streelman's game right now? It seems to be in really good form. Is this something we can expect to see going forward for the rest of the year?
There's certain golf courses that seem to fit into his mode. He hits a really heavy ball. I mean, the ball cuts a hole in the wind when he strikes it. He's sort of sneaky long, but when conditions get blustery, like they were when they were down in Innisbrook, when he got his victory down there at the Valspar a few years ago, he really does well when conditions get difficult and they're crosswinds because he just hits the ball so heavy through the air. So it's when conditions get like this that he seems comfortable. But I mean, he's figured out Pebble Beach. This is one of those places. Spyglass, certainly Pebble, also less so Monterey Peninsula, the country club, that there's a bit of a puzzle to solve to play these golf courses well. And he seems to have figured that out because whenever he shows up, yeah, he plays pretty solid.
I mean, the shot he hit into 15, that little wedge shot from 86 yards, that speaks to exactly what you're talking about. It almost looked like it had topspin. It just cut right through the wind, went up there to 10 feet. It was a great shot. Kyle, what did you think about his performance this week?
Yeah, I mean, it was really good. I think, so he goes 35-33 on Sunday. And he played Pebble on Saturday also. He went out in 31, which was crazy. And he's playing with crooked Larry Fitzgerald, who's sandbagging, you know, everything he looks at. He's won the amateur part of this, you know, twice now, but, I'm kidding about that. Streelman's great. I don't know. I don't know if I have like a ton of Kevin Streelman takes. He's one of those guys that you're like, oh yeah, he's like the 70th best guy in the world. And I never think about him. And yeah. I think that's a bigger like philosophical question. Like, do we think too much or give too much, airtime or lip service to like the top 11 guys? Cause those are the guys we talk. I mean, Nick Taylor wins the event. We spend the first 15 minutes talking about Phil, right? And that's just kind of how this thing works. And so I don't know. I mean, like Mark said, he played great. He was really impressive. Look, you go out and shoot, what do you shoot? 68 on Sunday.
Yeah.
But he gained 6.5 strokes on the field. There was only like 11 guys that were under par on Sunday. That's crazy considering how many guys, there were in the field. Yeah. 1, 2, 3. Yeah. There was like 12 guys. Spieth was 5 under. He was the best round. Maverick McNealy and Kevin Streelman were both 4. And then Berger was 3. And that was it.
Four rounds in the 60s.
Yeah. And so, I mean, to do that on that course, I give extra weight to doing it at Pebble. I don't know if that's the right way to look at it, but it's just different to me than if you're doing it at, you know, I don't want to pick on any tournament in particular. So I'll just say I give extra credit to doing it at Pebble too.
Now you mentioned an interesting thing to me. Should we talk about Kevin Streelman more often? The thing is that's hard about this is there's not a lot of opportunity to talk about. He's a great player and he's what I call a popper. He pops up at some tournaments and he can contend. He can come from 7 behind and win. He can make a ton of birdies in bunches. But for the most part, he's a guy that can miss a lot of cuts too. And I'm aware of Kevin Streelman because I'm always looking for picks for the week, right? I'm always digging through some statistics and I'm watching on Sunday. I'm trying to see who do I like for certain courses. And to Mark's point, there are a lot of courses that you would think, well, maybe not a lot, but there are some courses where Kevin Streelman fits perfectly. It seems like every time I choose him there, he misses the cut, and he's been fairly inconsistent. I mean, this year he's already missed 7 cuts in 11 events that he's played. Last year he missed 10 cuts in 26 events. There he missed 7 cuts in 2018. So he's a guy that can be a little hot and cold, and he signifies to me this 80-20 rule, which is you make 80% of your dollars and 20% of your events. And that's really what you see with Kevin Streelman. So, but hey, good on him for moving his way up the leaderboard on Sunday. It was impressive stuff. A couple of other guys that we got to get into here before we jump to a quick break. And that is Jordan Spieth. Jordan Spieth, yes, to me is the next topic of conversation. Look, he shot the low round of the day, Kyle, as you mentioned. Mark, when you look at Jordan Spieth, because I know we're going to get a little bias out of Kyle here.
So a little.
Start with you, Mark. Yeah, just a little bit. So what do you make of this? Is this a one-time deal, or is this something we can get used to seeing out of Jordan Spieth?
Well, last week we got word there in Phoenix that he had made a change to his grip, and he had strengthened up his grip a little bit, which I questioned, because as you know, as an instructor, you know, that kicks off a chain reaction of events throughout the golf swing, and matchups get kind of tossed out the window. But it did work out better, and he drove the golf ball better, but he did miss on Sunday. We were covering him a few balls with wedges and stuff long and left, as you would expect, because the stronger a grip becomes, the more the face shuts down. But as looking through the numbers today and yesterday, the days we had shot link numbers, because we didn't have shot link stuff at Spyglass in Monterey Peninsula. I mean, he was second off the tee in strokes gained off the tee on Saturday, and he led the field strokes gained approach to the green today. So I think, personally, that Cameron McCormick now and Jordan Spieth are onto a winning wicket. You know, they'd been barking up some wrong trees. Well, I don't know what they were doing, so don't quote me on that. But for a while, it just seemed like they were spinning their wheels. But it seems like something – they've gained some traction now. And so now I want to see, okay – They've sort of got the taproot into the ground. They've made a little headway. How does he build on this now? And so I'm sort of charged up about his performance some, because I think for a long time when they were, you know, making all of these moves to look like you're trying to get him more power, now it's some club face control, and he looks like he's building up to that.
Kyle, let's hear it. Let's hear the bias.
Mark, do you want a company discount on the stock that I'm selling back to everybody?
I'll take a discount. I need a big discount though.
You know, it's, I think the most, encouraging thing is his strokes gained on approach shots on Sunday. I think it was like 4 or 4.5 or something like that. And the reason that's encouraging is because it was, 4.57. The reason that's encouraging is because 2017 and a little bit in 2015, we talk about him being the best guy from on approach shots in those years, specifically 2017. He was unbelievable on approach shots.
Yeah. I think he was second on tour.
Yeah. And the thing he did best was, I thought, controlling his ball, controlling his distances, right? And what happened on Sunday is it's so windy, and this is such a – you can get these weird lies, and it's kind of wonky, and that's where he's so good. Remember, he plays great at Kapalua. He plays great at Augusta, like places like that where it's – and he's talked about that. He's like, I love playing those places because I can just sort of let my athleticism take over. And – so I think that's the encouraging thing, is it's blowing, it's tough conditions, it's windy, and you go out and put a 67 on Pebble on Sunday in that weather, that's real. That's a real thing. The driving, I mean, it was all over the place. He was second on Saturday, 64th on Sunday. I still don't know what I'm getting there, but for me, it's all about the approach shots with him. And if he can figure that out, then he can be a top five guy again.
See, I think that strokes gained approach the green, or should I say iron play? Iron play in general, I think, is a critical aspect of the game at this level for a couple of reasons. One, it allows you to hit it close to the hole to create birdie opportunities, obviously. But you mentioned controlling your ball, and when a Jordan Spieth, when you see Jordan Spieth rack up the putting statistics that he will rack up in a year, a lot of that comes from placing the ball with irons into the proper places. Yeah. Again, that's why he plays at Kapalua really well. That's why he plays in Augusta National really well, because he understands, first of all, he has the wisdom, the knowledge to hit the ball into the right places, but then he also has the ability to go ahead and do it. And that sets him up to make a lot of putts. And that's what you see. Now, the concern I have with Jordan going forward, so all that's very optimistic, and I agree with you wholeheartedly that that iron play is really, really important for Jordan. But the thing that gives me concern is I feel like there's a lot of required maintenance, a lot of required upkeep for him. And when you look at what happens, I've made the analogy before many times about it's like a little bit like whack-a-mole with him. He works on his iron play because it was bad, and then his putting gets bad. And then he goes to work on his putting, and then he loses his iron play and his driving. And I just wonder, how much time does he need to maintain the full swing? How much time does he maintain to how much time does he need to maintain the putting stroke? And a couple things I saw with the putter this week, it looks like while he did have a pretty good putting week, at least a good Sunday putting, it looks like he's got the toe of the putter up in the air a little bit more. And it looks like he's gotten rid of the arch in his left wrist, where typically for Jordan in 2015 and in recent years, the thumb kind of, what I mean by arch, the thumb bends away from your forearm. Whereas the opposite of that would be, maybe you call it a hinge, where the thumb gets closer to the forearm. I'm seeing more of the hinge and less of the arch, and it creates a little bit lower hands, and the toe gets up in the air a little bit. And that gives me some concern. And I don't know if that's something they have worked on intentionally, or if that's something that has just kind of crept in there. And if it's crept in there, I am afraid that this iron play may not last so long, because it's just so much upkeep. What do you think about that, Mark?
Yeah, your take, and I agree there. The thing for me with it all is, like, you talk about driving and iron play, and you're breaking it down into segments. You know, for me with Jordan, it's just working on the golf swing. And the beauty about his short game is, when I've asked him before, I'm like, what do you work on in putting? And he said he works on the timing of his backstroke to downstroke, the ratio of speed. And then he just works on alignment a bunch. When you'll see him on the greens, it's always just get the face online, get the body online, and then he sort of let stuff go from there. So the work he does on the putter is pretty rudimentary. I think still the challenge remains with ironing out the control from T2 green, because the golfers that he's trying to compete with are all very good from tee to green. I mean, you can list them, the list is long. So I think it's about the golf swing, and Jordan's just, he's a wizard with a wedge. So I'm not too concerned with him around the greens. He'll find a way, even when he's putting badly, to still make his share. So for me, it's still very much golf swing based, I would say.
And he did get himself into the top 50 in the world, qualify for WGC Mexico. It might be a good time to buy some of that discounted stock that Kyle's offering up. But before we get to a break here, one last player to get to, and that is Jason Day, and a player who really struggled on the greens today. He had 4 3 putts. He shot 3 over par today on Sunday, and he really seemed to struggle on the greens, which is uncharacteristic of a Jason Day. He's hitting great iron shots, giving himself plenty of looks, and he couldn't make any of them, and he was then 3-putting when he got a little bit farther away from the hole. Mark, you were out there. Do you think that's just a factor of conditions, or is this rust? Where does this come from Jason Day?
Well, I was covering his group for the CBS show, and there was a lot of waiting out there, and the 3 putts he missed. He had a 3-putt on 17 that he left woefully short, but you're putting downhill, it looks like it's brisk, and you're putting back into the wind. He had that 3-putt where the thing hooked out of the hole on 11. It was just gruesome. I mean, he was in a place above the hole where you couldn't stop it inside of 4 feet.
He almost came back and hit himself in the foot.
It did, yeah. He walks up to me with a smile on his face, and he goes, "Jeez." And I'm like, "Man, the hole must look like a thimble right now." And he laughed at me, and he goes, "It does." And then I was like, but from my vantage point, it looks like you hit the ball where you were intending to all the times. He said, yes, the one on 11 was right there. Then there was one on 12. I think it got left fast. Then there was one there somewhere or else I think it was on 16, where he was putting down from the front left-hand portion of the green. We left it short, which everyone was doing, Frank Nubolo mentioned. And then he had a putt that just darted left fast. But he did make two really difficult putts on 14 and 15, both of them downwind, downhill, breaking from the left. And so that's the, like, for me, like the acid test for a golfer's putting stroke. So, I mean, Jason is bullish on the way he's feeling. He mentioned so to me on 18. He hit the ball beautifully. I think today was largely conditions that the ball wasn't going in the hole, because the stroke still looked pretty fluid and pretty pure to me.
Do you buy that, Kyle? Are you in on that? You think Jason Day is coming back to the Jason Day we all once knew and loved?
I don't know. I think it comes down to injuries for him. You know, I just read a headline where he said he was considering retirement. He's only like 33 or 32, yeah, something like that. I mean, I think him and Ricky Fowler are pretty close to the same age, which is crazy. But I mean, the thing for me, like when he was winning at the clip he was winning at, back when he won that Players, he won that PGA, I always have to go back and look it up, because in my head, I'm like, this can't be true. He was the best putter in the world for like 4 years, and it wasn't even close. I mean, yeah, I think he had a couple of the best strokes gained putting seasons ever, like since we've been measuring, for the last two decades, essentially. And so now he seems like he's like fallen off from that. Like, he's a good putter, but he's not, it's not like, hey, Jason Day's the best putter in the world and it's not close. And so I think what you run into with him is sometimes, like this week, he'll hit it really good. And in the past, if he would have done that, you're like, oh, that's a wrap. Jason Day's going to win by four, you know, at Torrey or, you know, all the different places that he's won. And this week it just didn't happen. I think that's been, I wouldn't call it a shock to the system, but that's been the thing for me that has shifted a little bit over the last two or three years.
You mentioned injury, and to me, this is the biggest thing. This is where the slip in putting kind of starts from, to me, the back injury. When you're dealing with a back injury, believe it or not, it's harder to practice putting than it is to practice with a driver, for the most part, because you're standing bent over for a longer period of time, and you usually have to bend over more. With the driver, you're standing as upright as you are with any other club. So when you can't practice putting as much because of injury, it affects that putting stroke. And I think we've seen a little bit of that with Jason. So I'm like you, watching the health. And if he can stay healthy, I think we're going to have, I think he'll do fine. I think today was a kind of an anomaly type day. It's almost like the final round of the Sony. It gets so difficult. You just get on the wrong side of a couple shots, a couple bad breaks, and all of a sudden the round looks really ugly. But it's not necessarily a sign of extremely poor play. So I looked at Jason Day, and I'm very happy with his finish. I was hoping he was going to win, but given that he was my one and done pick for the week, I'm pretty happy with the solo fourth finish. And
to that, if I can share this, this is from his coach, Colin Swatton, longtime coach and caddy for a while. He texted me before our show today, and he said, Jason's back's doing better. He's able to do more practice, even with the putting, which you pointed out there, Greg, which was difficult a month or so ago, gone back to hitting draws with the irons, similar to 2015, 2016. Luke Reardon is the full-time caddy. He's not bag sharing anymore, which I think is a good idea. And then Colin writes here, he's excited to play and try to get an early win under his belt and take some good steps toward trying to get back to the top of the world ranking. So, I mean, that's Colin Swatton, who I trust highly. And if he's telling me that the back's doing fine, I'm believing.
That was his first. That was his first top 10. So he finished T5 at the Masters last year. He only had one other top 10 between after that Masters and today. Do you guys know which tournament it was?
You got to give me a second here to think about that. No, I don't.
It was the Travelers Championship.
And oh, I think, that's right.
I think that was the week where he had the like thing with Steve Williams, where he was like, it was like boot camp on the range or something. And he finished T8 that week. And everything else has been like miscut, T40, T52. It's been a not great 12 months for Jason Day.
I like to see that they're working on the iron play a little bit, going back to something that may explain what you were saying, Mark, why this iron play has been so poor basically since 2015. It's been this gaping hole in his game for a player with all the distance that he has, and he's accurate off the tee as well. So a long and straight driver of the ball, with one of the best short games, one of the best putting strokes in the game, and he's not really winning at the clip we all expected. It was because of this iron play. And so maybe he gets back into this draw. Maybe that'll be helpful for him going forward, because I do think that was the biggest hole in this game, as long as he's healthy. But anyway, he was my one and done pick for the week. I do want to talk about the one and done and give that update, largely because Jason Day had the best week out of anyone in this league. So we'll talk about that next. But first, let's take a break and hear a word from our partners.
I'm Mark Chapman. Welcome to the Planet Premier League podcast. Each week, Cesc Fabregas, Nader Manua and myself talk all things Premier League.
As a player, you don't have time to talk. No. You don't have time to make a plan. You just need to deal with wave after wave after wave.
We watched Coach Carter and he said, afterwards, the game's just about doing this for your teammates. And I remember looking around halfway through the film and half the squad was asleep.
Planet Premier League. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
The chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean and a woman named Sylvie.
She's a can model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
Back to our one and done update here. And as I was saying before the break, Jason Day had the best week of any of the selections here. We had a Patrick Cantlay pick who did pretty well. Kyle Porter, Max Homa was your pick this week. I found that to be a very interesting pick. Do you think, did you think you were going to have to go that deep? What's with this pick? Why do you think Max Homa is, the type of player that, you know, is worthy of a one and done pick?
Well, I just felt good about it. Honestly, I wanted to save like the Cantlay, and I don't really trust DJ right now. And so I started looking around and I was like, I don't know. I mean, Homa was kind of sticking out to me. He came in, two straight top tens, finished T10 here last year. So you're like, well, he posts pretty well here, and he kind of hung around the top 10 all week until I think he shot a 38 on the back nine on Sunday, which just destroyed it. But good week for him. You know, he finishes T14, 6 under, and I got what I wanted out of him, which was kind of middle of the pack, you know, get a little money and move on to the next one.
Yeah, keep yourself in the mix. I mean, it was a pick that I liked Max Homa. Rick and I on Tuesday were talking about him, and he was a guy that we were definitely interested in, but I just thought it was an extremely aggressive one and done pick. But hey, it worked out well. He got the job done, and he did a little better than Brant Snedeker. Mark, I know you were in the email chain. You were saying that there was a chance of a late pivot to Jason Day, but you stuck with Brant Snedeker. Unfortunately, he wasn't able to make the cut. What do you think? And it was a difficult – I mean, he was right on the cut line, and 18 at Pebble Beach on Saturday did him in as he hit it down into the waist area there on the left-hand side near the ocean. What led to the pick of Brant Snedeker, and why did you stick with him over Jason Day?
You know what? Honestly, it's just because he's played so well, yeah, so often, not that Day hasn't. I was a little concerned as to how Jason was feeling, but after talking to him and having him look me in my eye and tell me the back is good, then I'm like, okay, I'm a believer now. So I just stuck there because it was going to be cold later in the week. And, you know, you play early mornings and the back isn't as limber. And so I was like, I'm going to go with Sneds, who this is just a happy hunting ground. But the truth of it is I'm injured right now, and I'm considering taking a little time off from this league because, goodness, I've got like 3 missed cuts in the last 4 weeks. We've got to get back to the drawing board here in a hurry.
You're still beating Rick, though.
You are beating Rick. You're in 6 of 7 right now. And you know, the thing is that when I was earlier in the year, I was listening to you talk about how, you know, some of your strategies and how you've won multiple one and done leagues before. And I was thinking, man, one thing I might do is just copy Mark's pick every week. And that'll kind of put me in contention towards the end, but I'm glad I've gone with my own strategy here. As I said, I did pick Jason Day this week, who had the best finish of anyone. And so right now, the way it is right now in the field, we have Appy Barnrat. And see, I still don't know who Appy Barnrat is, which is a problem because he's leading the way.
That's EK. That's our
Sir EK.
Yeah,
he runs all the creek.
No, he runs all the podcast stuff, and then he just listens to all of our takes, and we forget him, and he's like, oh, that sounds good.
Right. So that's right. Right. He gets all of our info, hears all of our takes, puts them all together. See, I just got it mixed up because we got the Creek here who's in third now behind me after this week. Then we have our producer Jacob in fourth. We got Kyle Porter in fifth, who's right there in the mix. Mark and Rick have had some miscut struggles. And that's really been.
Who's the Creek? Who I don't know who's in third.
I thought that was our fearless leader EK. So
now EK is like the biggest barn rat fan on the planet. So that's definitely EK in first.
Okay, well he's definitely in first by a little bit of a ways. I'm gonna try to catch him going in this week. There's our producer Jacob Michael Kaiser, who's a daily fantasy addict. So he's in there in the mix as well. So all good stuff. It's looking good in the one and done league. Mark, if you need a little time off, let us know.
I've revisited my decision. I'm going to strengthen my grip just a little bit.
Okay, I like it.
I'm going to be ready for Riviera. I'm back.
You think the strong grip's going to benefit you at Riviera?
I do, yeah. That golf course likes a little bit of a draw, so we're going to try and turn it from right to left and see what happens.
Guys, I got to say, I am pumped about Riviera. I am fired up. It feels like this is like beginning of major season, Masters, all like everything. It feels like
the field's like a major field. I mean, it is as good as I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, I'm ready to go. Let's start it tomorrow.
Can I do this and just give the West Coast swing some love? Because my Lord, I mean, how good is this West Coast swing year in and year out? The golf courses are just spectacular. The weather has been fine. I mean, we started at Torrey Pines. That was awesome. Tiger played there. Phoenix is Phoenix. Then you've got this week, Pebble. It's just an American treasure, really, as Nance calls it. And then, of course, Riviera next week, which is awesome. And the field is so strong. So, I mean, this West Coast swing is just awesome.
Spectacular golf courses. I couldn't agree more. Another spectacular golf course in the world of golf was Royal Melbourne at the President's Cup, where Ernie Els had a great captaincy. In the next President's Cup, he won't be the captain. Does that disappoint either of you?
Disappoints me. I'd like him to have had another go, but apparently it must have taken it out of him a lot, because Ernie's got a lot on the go with these autism foundation in the school and he invested his heart and soul in this thing. And I think, you know, that late comeback by the United States was kind of another dagger that Tiger stuck into Ernie like he did throughout their playing career. And so I think it was a stinging loss. And I think he was just overcooked from the whole thing. Now, I'm going to give this a few months to settle, because maybe he will reconsider. I'm hopefully he will. But if that's his decision, all we can do is respect him, really, because he's a very wise man, I'll tell you that.
No doubt. Kyle, are you on the same boat here? You think he might reconsider?
No, because they're going to let Sungjae be player captain, so that'll be that'll be awesome. I'm already excited about it. Him and Abraham Ansar will be co-captains, and then
you think Sungjae will play himself for five rounds, or do you think he's going to give himself some rest Saturday afternoon?
No, Sungjae doesn't do rest. I think if we know anything about Sungjae, he does not sit.
So. Although he did rest this week, so we're going to have him back at the Genesis, but he wasn't in the field this week. I was kind of a little bit disappointed.
He was probably playing some Sunshine Tour event. I mean, who knows? He might have been sneaking into a Corn Ferry field. We got to check the OWGR tomorrow.
Kyle, before we go, this is just in other big news here. This is big news. You have a book club, and apparently Rory McIlroy is taking the recommendations. How did this come to be?
So people should go read the articles in the Irish Independent. Paul Kimmage, is that how you say it, Mark?
I'm not sure.
I think it's Paul Kimmage. He did a couple of interviews with Rory, and they're really good. They're these long-form interviews, and Rory talks about everything. He's the best interview in golf. It's not really close, I don't think. Anyway, he brought up a book called Digital Minimalism that I had brought up to him at the Masters last year. because I was writing an article on how you can't have your phone at the Masters and how at Augusta and how refreshing that is, how much fun it is for a week to not have your phone on you. And so we kind of went back and forth on that. And yeah, he just kind of mentioned it in there, which was very kind. But yeah, book club, join in. Let's go.
How do we join? I want in. If Rory's in there, I want in.
Yeah, Spieth's next. Spieth. I got some psychology books for Spieth to roll through. So heading into into major season.
Wow, a little dig at your own. At your own.
No, no bigger fan, no owner of more stock than Jordan Spieth than me.
Well, I love it. Love Jordan. Hopefully, he can continue this run of good play. Also, love hosting the first cut with you guys. You guys were great. Thanks again for joining, and I'm like you, excited for the Genesis. So we're gonna have one of the best fields, definitely the best field of the year, and a good little event here on the West Coast Swing. So very excited for that. I'm Greg Ducharme. Thank you for joining me. You can get me on Twitter at TheRealGFD. Kyle Porter, you can get on Twitter at Kyle_CBS, and you can get at @KylePorterCBS, and Mark Immelman, you can get at @Mark_Immelman, thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next time.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob?
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount+.